The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Well, most people in Western countries have the luxury of being spoiled for choice when it comes to what food they have on their plates. But it's for that very reason that something is going to have to give. With environmental and animal welfare concerns growing, food production and our eating habits are going to have to change. But what will the future of food look like, and how much are we willing to adapt? Joining me to discuss this is Michelle Darmody, who's a weekly columnist for the Irish Examiner. She's a food consultant and she's a PhD researcher in Trinity College Dublin, exploring food education. Michelle, how are you?
Good. How are you getting on?
I'm slightly worried because every time the future of food is discussed, it leads almost immediately to locusts. Is this where we're heading?
I think there's loads of different, you know, technologies and avenues that we can go down over the next few years about food. Insects is definitely one. And the main reason for that is because they're cold-blooded creatures. They don't really take that much food or that much heat or that much water to grow and to turn them into protein, for want of a kind of crude way of putting it. And so they're a very good source of proteins. But I don't think it means, you know, people in Ireland or other countries, unless they particularly want to, are going to sit with a plate of cricket. It's more that insects can be powdered, you know, they can be put into protein bars, they can be added to flour. So I think they will be used and they will come into our diet. And I know the UN is really putting a lot of research into it and looking into ways they can be used. So not necessarily going to be, you know, the way we are imagining kind of a plate of insects in front of us. But I mean, and that some other cultures do eat insects and they have done for millennia. You know, there's loads of cultures that have them in their diet already. But I suppose we eat prawns, if we think of it, they're not massively different to most insects. They have an exoskeleton, you know, they have a softer interior. I think there is definitely going to be a place for them. As I said, it may probably be in the more powdered form and into those protein bars, into those flours and into baking in different ways. So it really strong added protein in that way.
Well, to coin the phrase, we thought we would find out if there was any appetite for them in their whole form. So News Talk reporter JJ Clark took to the streets of Dublin armed with a bag of edible insects to find out if people are willing to give them a go.
I just showed you a packet of critters and insects. Would you give that a go in the future?
I would absolutely be willing to try it. I think that already, if you put that in a granola bar, I probably wouldn't even notice.
I really don't know. I'm looking at the packet here. It looks like crispy critters. I don't think I'd be eating crickets, locusts or mealworms.
So you're, you know, if you're at home and a fly lands on your knee, you swat it, you don't think, oh, yummy.
No, I wouldn't be thinking that's a tasty fly. I'm not the old woman who swallowed the fly like in the song, no.
I don't think it is. I don't know. I'm not used to eating bugs, so it sounds pretty gross.
Sure. I don't know. Maybe if they put them in a good curry.
And have you ever eaten insects before in your life?
I did, yeah, in tequila.
If they came in nice little confectionery boxes with little ribbons on them and they were marketed well.
If they're presented like this, no problem at all, yeah. High in protein, low in saturates.
Say you were at a restaurant or say coming back after a night out and there's insects on the menu, would you give it a go?
No, I'm more of a Domino's girl after a few drinks, to be fair. But I would try it in a restaurant if it was on the menu and it was something different. I would.
No, because I'm vegan.
I would try them.
Have you ever tried them before?
Only as part of a game, like a board game. Like, what do you call it? I'm a celebrity, get me out of here kind of board game, and they gave you wee critters to try. I don't know.
I've eaten spiders before.
Okay, where?
Just somebody dared me to eat a spider before and I ate a spider.
So in Ireland?
In Ireland, yeah.
And taste-wise, how was it?
It's quite just like a shellfish, like, you know what I mean? It's similar, like, you know, it's not too much different. There's a bit of a tang to it, like.
A lot of people are saying to me today that, like, if it tastes fine, yeah, I'm all right with it. Yeah. Would you be of the same opinion? Say, for example, you had, like, something that looked like a green pea, yeah, but was made out of wasps. Would you give it a go?
Yeah, I'd give it a go. Because, to be honest, yeah, I kind of agree with that. Like, if it tastes fine and if it's not, like, going to poison me or something, I'd definitely try it.
Only if I had to.
No. No, I couldn't. I'm well too afraid of insects.
I would definitely not go for it on the first go. I would be really, really disgusted, to be very honest.
Now that's News Talk's JJ Clark. They're reporting from the streets of Dublin on whether or not people would like the idea of eating whole insects. But of course, Michelle, what you were saying was that it is much more likely that they would be processed into flours or something along those lines, which I think to some extent already happens. Aren't certain food colourings insect derived?
Yeah, Cochonel actually is the red food colouring, kind of a pinky red. You'd get in an awful lot of confectionery and sweets, and that is made from beetles. So, you know, we have brought it into our diets already in some senses. And like I think one or two of the people had said, like in a granola bar or in different things, I think there's definitely room for that. And for people who want to introduce more protein, and it'll be a very inexpensive, proteins will probably get more expensive as, you know, resources get more sought after in the coming years. You know, beef and lamb and different meats will be probably become more expensive as time goes on. So this will be maybe a cheaper alternative for people just to want to introduce protein into their diet. So hopefully it'll be, you know, it'll be palatable to people in different forms, I would imagine.
Well, of course, there's two separate things. There's the access to protein for protein's sake, and there's the access to meat. And as that becomes harder to get and becomes more expensive, we're seeing lab-grown meat, we're seeing plant-based meat alternatives. What are the range of options there?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it seems like an antithesis to think of meat from a factory. I mean, I would think of meat on a bucolic field, you know, and in like really nicely farmed meats. And when you're thinking of these, you're talking of factory meat. So I can see why there's a resistance to them. It seems a bit dystopian to think of meat being grown from stem cell in a lab. But the people who are advocating for them are thinking of it as, obviously, you're not going to be deforesting. You're not going to need half as much water. There's not going to be as much in antibiotics. So you can grow meat in a lab completely antibiotic free, which is very attractive to some people. You can also then you can look at it, say, if you have places like a refugee camp on the edge of a desert or different places, it's much easier to set up a geo lab and to grow meats there and to provide people with the protein that they do need to live. Whereas you can't maybe get meat into those areas, you mightn't be able to farm in those areas. So there's people looking at it from loads of different angles, which is probably the interesting debate around the fact that it's made in a factory. And these are the debates that I think will be happening in the future, and we'll be looking at it. I mean, at the moment, there is the plant-based meat. There's two strains of different types of meat. So one is the plant-based, and I think there's huge tech industry putting funding into that, and they're having problems, I think, with the mouthfeel. I think you can get the taste of meat easier enough, but the feel, how it feels in your mouth, the texture of it, I think some of those labs are really working on that. And then the other is the cultured meat. That's a kind of completely different avenue. That actually is, in effect, it's turned into ground meat. It's used with the same stem cells as animals. So apparently it's taking 9 weeks to grow to the size of a bird. It's called cultured meat or in vitro meat. There's different words for it, but that would be using stem cells of an animal. So apparently I haven't tasted it. It looks, it cooks, it smells, it tastes exactly like ground meat.
Although is there not an issue to do with texture? Because obviously it can replicate from the stem cells the particular muscle group, but it can't live the life of a strip loin or a ribeye or whatever muscle it was.
Yeah, I mean, I don't advocate for or against it. I you know, it's an interesting subject. I don't know. I haven't personally tasted it. I think you have to probably be in Silicon Valley or in places like that to have tasted it yet. It's very you know, it's very nascent technology. It's just developing now, so I don't know anyone personally who I've chatted to tasted it. Just read about it and heard about it and talked to people who have worked in that area, and it is it's I mean it's a strange thing to think about. I think anyone will admit that it's a very odd thing to think of, your meat growing in a lab. It's something I think people take a long time to get used to. And you're right, I mean, like a good healthy animal has lived a life. It's walked, it's tasted, it's, you know, maybe eaten different types of grasses, you know, it's produced in, the meat is produced in different ways, and we can taste different meats in, you know, quality meat that has been given free roam compared to meat that's corn fed, you know. So all of those conversations are ones that people who are using this technology are going to have. And I think another interesting conversation we're going to all have to have is who owns the technology then when it has been developed, you know. Where is this going? Is it you know, larger firms that may have control over the patents, or, you know, will it be a democratic process? Will people, you know, in a refugee camp be able to, as an example, be able to kind of start working on these processes? So there's loads of different conversations to be had, I think, before it becomes a mainstream product. But there are definitely conversations, I think, that will start happening in the future. And like you said, the mouthfeel or the texture, the taste will be very important, because people will eat it once or twice if they think it's good for them. But they'll return again and again if they think it's nice. And you even heard that on your Vox Pop there, you know, people saying, if it tastes nice, and, you know, sure, I might go back to it. I mean, that's important. People food is to be enjoyed. Food is to be shared with your family. It's to be eaten around the table. It's, you know, at the end of the day, we can't forget that. And we'll go back to that constantly as humans, as social animals. We'll want to enjoy what we eat. So I think an awful lot of this can seem far removed. But in the reality, it's to be shared with your family around the table. So it has to be.
If I'm right in this, Michelle, there's a fair bit of food tech that's already on the shelves. There's a, without mentioning the brand name, there is one meat substitute, which, if I understand it, is a fungus grown in effectively giant petri dishes, which is then compressed into a meat product and sells quite well.
Yeah, fungus and algae then is another one as well that's being used as well in that sphere, you know, providing nutrition, providing. And I mean, it's a personal choice for people. There's a huge amount of people in the world who don't eat meat for a variety of reasons. And there is definitely alternatives, and there's a market, I suppose. Like you said, the companies are, larger companies are starting to produce this because they can see that there's a market there. And once there's a market, there's going to be a will, and they're going to put that technology into it, and they're going to experiment until they get it right, because there's people all over the world who want to start eating less meat and want to look at, or, you know, look at choosing how they eat meat, and want to eat meat, you know, once or twice a week, and then want to eat these other products other days a week. So I think in the future, we're going to see fungus, we're going to see algae, we're going to see, like we said, potentially insects. We're going to see loads of different things being brought into this arena, and they're going to be used and tested and tried, maybe on us or on different people, I'm not sure who. And I think in the future, they'll all be brought together to create something that that'll be put on our shelves.
Michelle,
and then it's up to people if they want to eat it or not. You know, there's people who will never want to eat it, and there's people who will relish it, you know.
Oh sure, I look at it now, there's people who you'll struggle to feed a rare steak to, they'd rather be taken out and beaten. Michelle, before I let you go, let's go back to where we started with the insects. Have you tried them, and did you like them?
I have tried them in different countries, whereas it's more on the menu, you know, it's not such a novel idea. And yeah, in dishes and in different ways of eating them. The powdered ones I've tried in Scandinavia, actually in Finland. They had, you know, powdered bars, a factory in Finland. I tasted them actually in Denmark, but that, you know, and you wouldn't have really noticed any different from, you know, another bar that you had. You know, there wouldn't have been any massive change in taste or texture of it. But again, like, looking, I think it's definitely going to be a future of food. I mean, there's loads of other things like personalized nutrition. I think we're definitely going to, instead of have this one size fits all that, you know, we're all supposed to eat 5 a day and 3,000 calories or whatever recommendation countries have, we're going to start looking at personal makeup. We're looking at our genetics, our gut microbiome, our metabolism, and we'll start looking at very personalized nutritional details for each person. You know, there's different things as well as these kind of technology based things, as things that, you know, food as medicine, I suppose, as such, we'll be looking at. And so is the editing of plants as well as meat. You know, there's genome editing of plants happening in a very different way than there was, say, of the GM in the past. These are looking at the exact genomic makeup of each plant, looking at the CRISPR technology, and maybe making tomatoes with more fruits on them, making shorter stems, and maybe for urban agriculture. And again, can seem a bit dystopian, but I suppose there's arguments for and against everything. And there, with that, I mean, there may be less fungicides if we had blight resistant potato. You know, there may be ability to grow things in different environments that we didn't already have, or maybe we can adapt some wilder plants that are good for us but we haven't been able to farm. So there's different ways of looking at all these technologies for the future, and I hope that they're all taken in a way that supports welfare, supports the environment, and supports the nutrition of the people involved in eating them.
Michelle, you'll have to come back and join us again to deconstruct the plant editing and the microbiome and all that goes with it.
Yeah, there's loads of, loads.
Thank
of
you so much. That is Michelle
Thank
Darmody.
You very much. Take
she
care.
Is weekly columnist for the Irish Examiner, food consultant and PhD researcher in Trinity in Dublin, and of course exploring food education and all of that.